was stated, we want to thank everybody for tuning in and watching us on live stream. I believe it was stated this morning after services that we had close to 100 people that had tuned in to watch, and we appreciate that. We appreciate everyone that tunes in. And as was stated at the end of the sermon this morning, if you have anything that we can help you with, please do not hesitate to contact someone here at ESAD. We've been looking at some characters from the Old Testament, from the Bible, on Sunday nights. And the Bible tells us, within its own pages, that the Old Testament was given to us at great value. It is of great value to anyone that strives today to be a child of God. In fact, we read in passages like Romans 15 and verse 4, where Paul says, "For everything that was written in the past was written to teach us, so that through endurance and the encouragement of the Scriptures, we might have hope." So we learn here that there's a great source of hope in what's written in the Old Testament. He also wrote in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 11 that these things happened to them as examples for us. They were written down to warn us who live at the end of the age. So here he tells us that these things were written for our admonition, the things that we're going to talk about tonight from the book of Leviticus, that we might make similar mistakes in our lives today, that we need to learn and not make those mistakes today. Because we can see, even though it was a different set of laws, we can see that when God was displeased, the reaction that God would have. And this includes, as I said, the stories, if you will, from the book of Leviticus, where they offered strange fire. Now, the book of Leviticus by itself is a dry book to a lot of people when they study it, but it has a great deal of value for Christians today. Its name is derived from Levi, from which the tribe came the priest. And it's primarily a handbook for those priests while they were under the law of Moses. Reading that book and all the others of the Old Testament helps the Christian today to better understand books in the New Testament like the book of Hebrews. And it's through primarily a book outlining priestly rituals, and it does record an incident involving the sons of Nadab and Abihu, where they offered strange fire. And what happened to them can provide valuable lessons for you and I today. And what did happen and what we can learn from it will serve for the basis of what we're going to study tonight. So let's begin by the incident itself. The incident with Nadab and Abihu. Circumstances leading up to this event, if you will, were the consecration of Aaron and his sons as priests in chapters 8 and 9 of the book of Leviticus. In chapter 9, we see that the glory of the Lord appeared. When they consecrated Aaron and his sons, they offered a sacrifice. And it tells us in those verses that the glory of the Lord appeared and fire came out of the offering. We begin reading in verse 22 of chapter 9, and it says, "Then Aaron lifted up his hand toward the people, blessed them, and came down from the offering, the sin offering, the burnt offering, and the peace offerings. And Moses and Aaron went into the tabernacle of meeting and came out and blessed the people. Then the glory of the Lord appeared to all the people, and fire came out from the Lord and consumed the burnt offering and the fat on the altar. When all the people saw it, they shouted and fell on their faces." So we see here a similar event in that fire comes out from God to consume this offering that had been made on behalf of Aaron and his sons. We see here in these verses that fire came out from the Lord. A miraculous thing, an event here that the people really couldn't understand, but they're fascinated by it. And the text tells us that he consumed the burnt offering and the fat on the altar. But the most important aspect of this is that God does this, and it tells us in the last part of verse 24 there that the people, when they saw it, they shouted and fell on their faces out of reverence, out of respect for God. And then we come to the story of Nadab and Abihu, where they offer profane fire in their service to God. What is this profane fire? In chapter 10 and verse 1, it says that it's described as a profane fire, or a strange fire, as some translations put it. But they offered, in a nutshell, a fire that was not commanded by God. We could stop the lesson right there. They did something that God did not command, and they were punished. But we notice the verse says that Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, each took his censer and put fire in it, and put incense on it, and offered profane fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded. Now we can stop right there and ask another question. What was profane fire? Well, as we've already pointed out, it's something that God had not commanded. That's what the verse says here. But in other passages and other translations, the King James and the New American Standard, it calls it a strange fire. Strange. It's strange in that it's not something that God has given authority for. The New International Version just simply says it's unauthorized fire. And if we look at this and apply it to us today, which we'll do more of at the end of the lesson, we cannot offer strange fire or unauthorized fire to God today in our worship service. It is important to note that this was something that God had not commanded. These two men that had just been consecrated, ordained, if you will, as priests in the eyes of God in front of all the congregation of the nation of Israel, now they're doing something immediately that God has not commanded. And they're going to be punished. So when we look at this, we notice verse 2 of Leviticus chapter 10, and it says, "So fire went out from the Lord and devoured them, and they died before the Lord." You know, I oftentimes think to myself, we should be grateful that we don't live under the old law. I used to work across an assembly line from this girl, and she says, "Oh, I just wish we could go back and live under the old law, the Old Testament." And I said, "Are you serious? Can you think about what your life would be like?" And I began to talk about her life. And I said, "First of all, you tell everybody that you are sleeping with a married man. You're an adulteress. You know what the old law says about an adulteress? You're taken outside the city and stoned." I said, "Now you fuss about all the time that your children are unruly. You can't control them. You'd have to take them to the elders of the city, and they would be taken outside the city and stoned." I said, "Are you sure you want to live under the old law?" She said, "Well, no, I'm not sure." But see, the old law is written so that we can learn that we don't need to do things that are displeasing to God. The principle is still the same. What Nadab and Abihu did was doing something that God had not commanded, and God was displeased with it. We need to learn today. We don't do things that God has not commanded because He's displeased with it today. We see here that fire went out and consumed them. Verse 2. So let's compare this to what we noticed in chapter 9 a moment ago when the priests were consecrated. It says in chapter 9 and verse 24 that fire came out from before the Lord and consumed the burnt offering and the fat on the altar. When all the people saw it, they shouted and fell on their face. They were in awe. They had this reverence for God for what had happened. This fire came out from God as a sign that He was pleased with what was going on. So now we flash forward to chapter 10 and verse 2, and it says, "So fire went out from the Lord and devoured them, and they died before the Lord." So what's the difference in these two episodes of fire coming out from God? Well, we see from chapter 9 and verse 24 that God was accepting of that. God accepted what was being done there. In chapter 10 and verse 2, He rejected this profane or unauthorized fire. In chapter 9 and verse 24, we see that that was a sign of God's blessing upon the people. In chapter 10 and verse 2, we see that it was a curse. So the question needs to be asked, and you know the answer, but we're going to ask it anyway. Why was God displeased? Why was God displeased? And I'm going to throw several suggestions at you that have been offered by different people. Some say they put coals in their censers that were not from the altar of burnt offering. That was what was commanded in Exodus chapter 30 and verse 9 and Leviticus 16 and verse 12. They were given instructions on how to offer this fire. Some say that there was a prohibition about intoxicating drink, and they must have been drunk when they offered this. Leviticus chapter 10, verses 8 through 10. Some say they attempted in this process
to enter the holy place at the wrong time, Leviticus chapter 16, verses 1 and 2. And it could have been that it was a combination of all of these things. But verse 1 notes that it was something that was not commanded. That's all we need to know. That's all we need to know. That's all we need to understand is that they did something that God said, do not do. Now, there's people today in the New Testament era, the Christian age, that always want a thou shalt not. If you had a thou shalt not, would you still do it? Look at Nadab and Abihu. Thou shalt not offer profane or strange or fire that's not authorized. And what did they do? They did it anyway. I dare to say that there are people in this age that we live in that say, I want a thou shalt not, but I'm going to do what I want to do regardless. And I'm going to bust a gut trying to do what I want to do regardless. It was doing something that God had not commanded. We notice here of what an analytical, an analysis of chapter 10, verses 1 through 3. The verse says that they offered profane fire, according to the King James Version. The fire itself was not sinful. There are things we do today that are not sinful within themselves, except when they conflict with what God has told us to do. The fire was, or this fire was, which God had not commanded them, according to verse 1, which equaled profane fire, or something unauthorized. And in verse 3, God said that it was to be those by those who come near me, I must be regarded as holy. So what I see here from Nadab and Abihu, that they didn't regard God as holy because they were going to do what they wanted to do regardless. And the same is true with us today. If I'm given a command in the New Testament, and I do what I want to do regardless of what God's law says, then am I not profaning my worship of God? And anything brought into worship which God has not commanded is profanity. You know, Moses gives an explanation of what happened to Nadab and Abihu. Those who approach God, he says, must regard him as holy. We see that in verse 3. The New American Standard says, Moses said to Aaron, it is what the Lord spoke, saying, by those who come near me, I will be treated as holy. And before all the people, I will be honored. So Aaron, therefore, kept silent. I mean, think about it. These were his sons. God had just consumed two of his sons by fire and killed them. Aaron could have been upset. I've seen people today that they get upset when the church wants to discipline their children. And they say, oh, that's not going to work. That's not going to work. Yes, it will work. Anytime you do what God said do, it will work. I guarantee you, I have proof that it will work. All you have to do is pick up this book right here, and you can see evidence of God's work being successful. All you got to do is read the Word of God. So Moses gave instructions there. He said that you must come to God and treat Him as holy, and God will be honored. Holy means to be set apart, to be consecrated, to treat as special. And that's how we need to treat our service of God. That's how we need to treat God. And evidently the actions of Nadab and Abihu did not show God the proper respect, or he would not have consumed them with fire. But as he says here in the second part of this verse, in chapter 10 and verse 3, the word that God must be glorified before all. That word means to give honor to. In fact, that's what the New American Standard Bible says. And before all the people, I will be honored, God says. Glorified means to be honored. The actions of Nadab and Abihu, therefore, did not honor God. But Moses went on with further instructions. He said Nadab and Abihu's bodies were to be removed outside of the camp, verses 4 through 5. They were now dead. They were deceased. And you could not have dead bodies inside the camp because that was another profaning of God's camp, God's people. So we see in verses 6 through 7 that Aaron and his surviving sons were not to grieve while still being consecrated to serve as priests.
It must have been a difficult thing for Aaron to lose two of his sons in such a way. And on an occasion, that should have been a time for great rejoicing for him and all of his sons. I mean, they'd just been consecrated as the priest of Israel. And since these things were written for our learning, 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 11, that Paul writes here, what lessons might we learn? Remember, Paul said all these things were written as to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, our encouragement, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. So what kind of lessons can be learned from this incident with Nadab and Abihu? Well, I learn regarding our worship that when I come before God, I must worship God in a way that only He has commanded. No other options. If God says do this, then I say, yes, Lord, I'll do that. If God does not give me instructions, then I need to study. This was the mistake of Nadab and Abihu, Leviticus chapter 10 and verse 1. So today, when we offer God something that's not commanded, then according to Leviticus chapter 10 and verse 3, then we are not regarding Him as holy. And according to that same verse, we're not treating Him in a glorified way. Learn something from the Old Testament. Learn what happened to Nadab and Abihu and the instructions that God gave to Moses to give to the people and to give to Aaron. We must be pleasing to God in every aspect of our worship. If God is holy and truly and worthy of glory, how can a sinful man know what God desires as acceptable worship? Can a sinful man read the mind of God? Well, no one can read the mind of God. But if he could, then God would not be all that holy or set apart. And if he could, then God is not all that different from man and therefore not worthy of glory. So really, a man cannot know without divine revelation how God ought to be worshipped and glorified. One of the passages that I really like and impressed with is Isaiah 55, verses 89, where God says through the prophet Isaiah that my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. I cannot begin to fathom what God has in His mind. All I can know about what God has in His mind is what He reveals to me, what He reveals to all of us through His written Word. God is truly to be worshipped with glory and honor. And we do that by doing exactly what He says and not going beyond and not coming short of what He says do. This is one reason that I choose. Well, here's another version of Isaiah 55. My thoughts are nothing like your thoughts, says the Lord, and my ways are far beyond anything you could imagine. For just as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. I like that. My thoughts are nothing like yours, says God. His thoughts, everything about Him, is so far ahead and above us that we can't begin to scratch the surface of what God knows. And this is one reason, as I said. This is one reason we don't use mechanical instruments of music in our worship service. In the New Testament, only singing is specified. We look at passages like Ephesians 5 in verse 19, where Paul writes, sing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs among yourselves, and make music to the Lord in your heart. The sister passage of that is Colossians 3 and verse 16. Where he writes there to the Colossae brethren, let the message of Christ dwell among you richly as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom through psalms, hymns, and songs with the Spirit, singing to God with gratitude in your hearts. to praise God with a mechanical instrument of music would be something that God has not commanded, just like the profane fire. And it would be presumptuous on our part to think that God would allow it when He hasn't specified use a piano. To do so would be trying to second-guess God, which is a dangerous thing. So far, have we learned nothing of Nadab and Abihu? If God wanted such things as instrumental music, He would have told us to pluck, pick, beat, strum, blow, whatever. But since He didn't, we have to give Him the respect and honor and glory that is due Him by doing simply what He commands. Now, what about God's approval for mechanical instruments in the Old Testament? Here we can learn from the example of Moses again. At one time, God told him to strike the rock. Remember, to obtain water in Exodus 17, verse 6. Later, God told him to speak to the rock, Numbers chapter 20 and verse 8. And when Moses did the second time what God said to do the first time, well, you remember the story, don't you? He failed to hallow or show reverence to God, Numbers 20, verses 11 and 12. And he lost the right because of that to enter the promised land, Numbers 20 and verse 12. Deuteronomy 32 and verse 51. To me, that's the closest that we have to disobeying God and seeing our disobedience. I don't think God, according to the New Testament pattern, is going to strike us dead like that because we disobey God. But here's an example of Moses who disobeyed God and he lost the hope of the promised land. He disobeyed God and did not see the promised land. That's the comparison that you and I need to make today. If we disobey God today and we fail to make reconciliation of that, then we know that we're going to lose that promised land that has been promised to us. We'll lose heaven. What we learn from the example of Moses is that we must do what God has revealed for the appropriate time for us. God may have approved instrumental music, but He says in the New Testament that we are simply to sing. That's the command. But then there are some that will say, just like the woman I used to work with across the assembly line, but God allowed it in the Old Testament, but we're not worshiping God under the Old Testament. And as I stated earlier, we need to be thankful. I mean, imagine how thin the population would be if God still wanted us under the old law. So, regarding our priority of God, service to the Lord comes before anything. And this is difficult for some people. But God, serving God has got to come before even family. And this is what we learn when Aaron was not allowed to grieve for his sons that God had just destroyed. It was necessary for the others to see those bodies being taken out of the camp, verses 4 through 5. And Aaron had just been consecrated, verses 6 and 7. And service to the Lord came first. That's what Moses told him. God comes first. You can apply that to any aspect of our lives. Well, I want God comes first. Well, I think God comes first. Well, I got this. God comes first. Jesus gave us this example throughout the New Testament that God comes first regardless of what you may want, of what you may think, what you may desire. That's another lesson to learn from Nadab and Abihu and the end result of them being punished by God. As I said, Jesus makes similar points throughout the pages of the New Testament. In Luke chapter 9, verses 59 through 62, He was calling on people to follow Him, and they were making all kinds of excuses. Remember, well, first let me go bury my... No.
Let the dead bury the dead. I don't think Jesus is saying that you can't mourn or grieve after those that are dying or have died. But you still have to understand that God must come first. In Luke chapter 14, verses 25 through 30, he addressed this to the multitudes that were following him. Our first inclination as children of God today has got to be God. Serving God must come first. Doing what God said must come first. We have to leave the I wants, I thinks, and I desires, put them in your back pocket, and put God first. Jesus talked about this in Matthew chapter 10, verses 34 through 37, as he prepared his disciples for the work that they were about to undertake. You've got to serve God first. And it's a harsh lesson for us when we understand that we cannot do things that God has not commanded. Simply put, we must do all and only the things that God has commanded. But when conflict arises between God and family and commitment to the family, again, we have to understand that Christ must come first. For example, obeying the gospel, despite objections from family members. Oh, you don't want to do that. You don't want to be baptized. And you're baptized anyway because you understand that Christ must come first. We know people like that, don't we? Another example would be putting the assemblies of the Lord's church first when company arrives. This is one thing I've never understood. We can be Christians for 10, 20, 30 years and let family show up on a Sunday afternoon and we drop the Lord for them. I've never got that. I've never understood why forsaking the Lord for family that shows up for a visit is so much more important. I've often said, why don't you bring them to services with you? Well, no, they wouldn't come. They wouldn't do that. They wouldn't feel comfortable. Well, do you not feel comfortable enough to leave them at your house until you go worship the Lord and then come back? You see, there's a problem here. If they're that type of family and you don't trust them to stay in your house till you get back, then why are you putting them before the Lord to stay home with them? Oh, I get it. You don't trust them. That's why you put the Lord off, so you can make sure you stay there and they don't steal nothing. They don't raid the refrigerator and take all your groceries, right? Like the Griswolds might do. God has to come first. And this requires that we might have to be rude to our guests sometimes. And we might have to let them be at home, at my home, by themselves until I return. I mean, you think about it. Isn't this what Jesus is talking about in Matthew 6 and verse 33? Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Now, I understand in the preceding verses, he's talking about having anxiety over stuff. But the principle here applies to a great number of things. Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness. Are you putting God first? You know, it's a very easy thing for us to become complacent in serving our God. And when this happens, it shows up in our worship service. It shows up in how we worship God, and it shows up in our service to the Lord. And rather than regard him as we were told in Leviticus 1 through 10, verses 1 through 3, rather than regard him as holy and glorify him by doing exactly as he says, we begin to waver. We begin to offer worship how we want and when we want. And so our worship is one of convenience instead of one of conviction. We need to be reminded. We need to be reminded and study the incidences like Nadab and Abihu and what happened to them. And I think if we do that, then it will humble us in the presence of God, and it will serve to remind us of the seriousness of serving the Most High God.
So the question is, do we regard God as holy and properly glorify Him in our service? Do we serve Him first, even above those that are closest to us? I hope and I pray that examples like Nadab and Abihu will serve to encourage us to serve God and to put God first. We live in difficult times. There are so many things in our society that are pulling at us. When you have kids, they pull this direction and that direction, and then your kids are having this go on and that go on, and you have to be involved. You want to be involved in what your kids are doing. Anybody that's ever had kids in the band knows what I'm talking about. Sports, you know what I'm talking about. Just school in general, you know what I'm talking about. And that's on top of what you've got trying to draw your attention, your job, your family, extended family. But I hope and pray that we will always remember the stories of the Old Testament and learn to put God first in every aspect of our life. If you're in the sound of my voice watching on live stream and maybe you've not done what we've talked about, you haven't put God first, and you see that there is a danger in not doing that, if you need to confess sins, please contact the elders or myself or one of the deacons, and we'll help you, help to accommodate you in that. If you're here in the live stream and watching and you understand a need in your life to be baptized, then I encourage you to make contact with us as well. And I do appreciate those that have listened and watched on the live stream. It is encouraging. I hate that we're having to shut down in this capacity because of everything, but it is a blessing that we do have the live stream. I know there are people that are watching, and I do appreciate it. The church here appreciates it. The elders appreciate it. It makes us feel like what we've done is beneficial to spreading God's word. Again, thank you for being with us tonight. We'll have a closing prayer in just a moment.